Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. We've been talking about fun things. We've been talking about not fun things. Just some context for those, because this came up, and it's an important context when we're talking about using herbicides, because we have to talk about that a lot. And I tell you, herbicides are not very smart. That's the first thing you need to know. They're not very smart. The herbicides don't go in and say, oh, I'm going to kill this plant but not this plant. In fact, many herbicides have a broad spectrum effect on a lot of different types of plants. What we depend on is that they affect some plants slightly more than others, and that means dosage is very, very important in terms of killing. Because if you use something like atrazine, which is dangerous to everything, I mean, atrazine is crazy bad. If you use it and you use it during hot weather on St. Augustine, and unless you're using it in very, very carefully, it's going to kill the St. Augustine just like it kills the weeds. And in fact, if you even in spring, even in cool temperatures when you use atrazine, it can kill the St. Augustine if you're not very, very careful about how you apply it. A lot of the other herbicides that we're applying now without thinking, they cause a lot of problems for the lawn. They cause not only problems for the lawn, but for plants that grow with their roots in the lawn, so they can affect your flower beds that are next to the lawn. They affect water tables. They affect fish in huge ways. There's some issues. So you got to be really careful about using those. The question is, does it affect people? Well, we don't care whether it affects people. I mean, who cares about that? You don't care, do you? You don't care whether it affects people. Well, they do, as it turns out. They do affect people. So when you're spraying herbicides and pesticides, which I see doing, and fungicides, I've watched this happen on football fields throughout Alabama. They'll go out and they'll spray these herbicides, pesticides, fungicides. What do you think happens? Well, they send the band out, and the band starts, and then they send the football team out within 12 hours of this stuff being applied, and the football team just rolls around in it. Now, I will tell you that as an applicator of these herbicides and pesticides, they wouldn't. It was a violation of federal law to be in the field unless 48 hours had elapsed, unless 2 days had elapsed. I couldn't even go in the field legally as a cotton scout when I was growing up. And yet we send our kids out there right now. We send them to play in the yard after we put this. It's crazy weird. Crazy weird. And then I did say something about benzene. I wanted to follow up on that. I mean, benzene is crazy bad. Crazy bad. Carcinogen, substantial quantities of data leak it to acute leukemia, bone marrow abnormalities, and cardiovascular disease. I mean, it's big. We know that these things are there. It has a list of effects on people that are huge. Benzene. Is that a herbicide? No. Benzene is one of the primary and most important constituents of gasoline. You're exposed to benzene every day. Does it affect you? I guarantee you it does. And I guarantee you it's had a lot of effect on a lot of people. We, because of the degree of our exposure, we don't think about this sometimes, but we probably should more. Charlie, let's let Mike do some talking here for a second. Mike, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Bill. I was going to ask you about some vegetable seeds.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. We have all these to choose from, which makes it so much fun. And, you know, at the end of the season, once you've gone through, you have some winners and, you know, some things that do really well. And then some varieties that you just, you know, you choose not to plant again, sort of the losers. And so I'd kind of like to hear maybe your list of losers, you know, if you can save me the trouble of going through and trying some that look good, look like they'd work for our area, but just didn't turn out as productive as other things. Do you have any losers that stand out?
There are a bunch of losers. I try to forget about the losers. So I have to think really hard. But you know, there it is a great question. It's a great question. So, you know, and there are a lot of different plants and vegetables out there. So let's do this exercise as well as I can. Right off the top of my head. You got me on the spot, but I'm going to try this off the top of my head. So let's take something like beans. Is that an okay place to start?
Sure, sure.
Blue Lake is the sorriest bean you could ever grow here. It just doesn't grow well here. It hates our hot days. It can't get up to speed, and yet everybody talks about Blue Lake and what a great thing it is. Kentucky Wonder has not been very good for me. I'm very unimpressed with it here. Kentucky Wonder beans, not very good. Most bush beans can be very difficult here, but there are a few that are good. Contender and some other things have turned out all right, though bush beans are always a little bit of a problem. So I got this long list of beans that a lot of people grow. A lot of the Italian beans, the fine filet beans from Italy, they don't do that well here. What can I just – and so you're going to have to let me name one that does really well each time I
this.
Okay. So the one that did – the one that I am in love with, can I just say the bean that I am absolutely in love with and that I will – I'm just thinking, this is it, man. I have found it. Selma Zesta. A great bean that's actually a type of rattlesnake bean. It's related to rattlesnake beans. It's similar to rattlesnake beans, except the flavor is better. The pods are more productive. It seems even more heat and humidity tolerant than rattlesnake. A great bean. And compared to all these other things in terms of flavor, in terms of use, in terms of production, in terms of heat and humidity tolerance, Selma Zesta is great. And there was my long list of things. There's beans. Well, this could take a while. Eggplants. So let me just say something about eggplants. You know, there is a tremendous difference in productivity of eggplants in this climate. And it can be really tricky. And I have gone through a lot of eggplants. One of the things I find is that the varieties of eggplants that grow well up north and that tend to be Italian varieties because they don't seem to require as much heat. And they don't require the high night temperatures. They don't even seem to tolerate those high night temperatures. So there are a lot of Italian varieties of eggplant that people up north grow, and I don't even remember all the names, but there you'll see them in a lot of seed catalogs from people up north, and they do just terrible here. So I almost grow exclusively Asian eggplants. Because Asian eggplants come from a climate in Cambodia and Vietnam, South China, Taiwan, South Japan, that is very similar to our climate in terms of these humid days. So when it comes to eggplants, I'm continually experimenting with the Asian varieties. Very important. And there are a bunch of them. I can't tell you but that helps. I mean, that's kind of a way of sweeping
avoid
all those.
Avoid the Italian sounding names and go for the
right.
The Asian
go for the
names,
Asian ones, the weird Asian names that you have no idea how to pronounce. But a lot of times they'll be very very normal names. In fact, a lot of the best Asian varieties that I grew this year are being marketed in the U.S. with very normal sounding U.S. names, but they are obviously Asian things. There's a place. There are a number of places that sell Asian eggplants, Kitasawa seeds, and they're becoming more popular. There's a great Chinese eggplants. A lot of the long Chinese eggplants are very good. Ping Tung Long was one of the first. It's a Taiwanese eggplant. It's turned out it's okay. It's not one of the best, but it's very good. Ping Tung Long. Thing Yuan purple. Yeah, so it's a Chinese name, is very good. But then there's a bunch of others that I'm seeing that seem to be coming from South China and Vietnam that are very good. A lot of the Thai eggplants do very well for us. In fact, I'm very happy with some of the Thai eggplants right now. So they're all those can be very, very good. A lot of people like the green eggplant, the Louisiana green, another eggplant that's had a long history here in the South, and it probably is very closely related to the Thai green eggplants. So there's one way of thinking about it. Any other varieties that I should comment on specifically?
How about everything that's, you know, that we're getting, that we're doing now, the all the wintertime things? Anything come to mind of things that
absolutely.
I want to just pass over?
Absolutely. Great. 100%. Let's talk about kale. Can we just talk about kale? It may be my prejudice, and I'm reluctant to push it. But to me, Russian kale is so much better than any other kale. It's unbelievably more productive. The flavor is better. It's prettier. The Russian varieties of kale and the hybrids involving Russian kale are the best for me. There are a lot of other roughly kales and the little purple kales and the little cute kales and the small kales, and I don't even mess with them. It's Russian kale for me. I just try not to waste my time too much with other things. There's an Italian palm kale or a dinosaur kale. I always sort of aspire to grow it, and it's very good. It has very good leaves. It's very pretty. It's very ornamental. It is not as productive. So, I like it, but it's not the Russian kale. The Russian kale is the best. And not Siberian kale. There's a Siberian kale out there. They don't seem to do so well. But if it's got Russian kale in its background, it does very, very, very well for us. Cabbages, I'm not the expert cabbage grower. Here's what I can say is I have failed a lot at growing cabbage. And mostly when I fail at growing cabbage, it's because I choose a long season variety, a variety that takes a long season to head. You are doomed in this climate if you do that. You've got to choose, practically speaking, a variety that heads up in a very short season. I believe this is true. This seems to explain why a lot of people do very well, is because they use these short season cabbage varieties. So long season cabbage varieties don't work very well. Collards is a big experiment. We're still experimenting. I've experimented with a bunch of different collard varieties. John Olive says to me that Georgia collards are about as good as it gets. And John may be absolutely right. I think he's probably right. I'm not willing to throw in the towel on trying other varieties. In fact, I'm trying a bunch of new varieties this year that I haven't tried before. But Georgia collards, I mean, they just are hard to beat.
Right, right.
And, boy, that leaves a lot of things like broccoli, but if I don't quit talking, Charlie's going to bang me over the head.
I hear you. Well, hey, I appreciate it. You make me feel better. Maybe I'm not such a bad gardener after all.
That's right, Mike.
Makes me feel better about some of my failures.
I'm going to come back. My view is you're not a good gardener if you haven't killed hundreds of plants. And the only good gardeners are the ones who repeatedly kill plants. Because they learn from it, and they learn what works.
Excellent. Well, appreciate it, Bill. Thank
you. All right, good, Mike. I'm going to try to hit some more of these. That was kind of fun. That was a good exercise. Hey, we're going to be back. David, boy, you got some questions here lately, David. It's good to hear from you. Greg, you hit it. Yellow squash, man, boy, is it is bad here. Sail right round all the seven oceans, drop it straight into the deep blue sea. She's as sweet as Tupelo honey.
The world has changed. Where you get your financial advice should too. As you look to protect and grow your wealth in this uncertain market, the right partnership can give you one of the most powerful tools in investing today: confidence. Let your UBS financial advisor, Drew Wing, advise you on how to invest in the market while protecting your principal with FDIC insurance. Advice that's backed by the only research in the industry dedicated to helping individual investors like you. So call your UBS financial advisor, Drew Wing, at 251-510-0748, because putting the right protection in place today can make a big difference tomorrow. Call Drew Wing at 251-510-0748. That's 510-0748. Advice you can trust starts with a conversation. $200,000 minimum account balance. UBS Financial Services, member SIPC.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? Since 1986, AccuQuote has helped literally millions of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how they do it. They monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $20 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask them about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you outlive your policy. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote. Call 1-800-318-1787. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 1-800-318-1787. That's 1-800-318-1787.
They're two old Marines with just a little bit to say.
The question is, have the VSOs become part of the system? Have they forgotten they're supposed to advocate for the veterans and not abdicate that responsibility?
The First Amendment right to say it.
I mean, come on.
And the fighting spirit to keep it.
They're a tool of the war machine.
Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Scuttlebutt Network Radio. Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. Boy, that was, you know, that really is a fun and interesting exercise. I have not grown all of the possible seeds in the world. You know, there's another one, and I got to say, because it really is striking me right now, peppers. And so we talked about this before. The peppers from Mexico, and I love Mexico. Is a great place. It's one of the great centers of plant diversity in the world. But and it just is a beautiful place from many perspectives. It's really part of our continent. It's part of North America. It's very much a part of us. It has contributed to our wonders here in many ways. But I will tell you that the peppers from Mexico in general don't do as well in the Southeast. And there's a very good reason for that. And it has to do with the fact that Mexico in general is fairly dry. And they're not used to these high night temperatures and high humidity. And so a lot of times Mexican peppers from Mexico have a hard time here. Poblanos, anchos and poblanos. You know, I love them. They're great. They're delicious. They're wonderful peppers. They have a great distinctive flavor. They don't do well here. Bell peppers, you know, bell peppers can be very hard here. And they will seem particularly hard once you find peppers that actually do well here. And we've talked about the Caribbean peppers, the peppers from the Caribbean that are in the Chinense group. And not all of them are hot, like the habaneros are hot. But not all of those Caribbean peppers are hot. Ají dulce, or however we're going to pronounce it, is a wonderful pepper that's just really fun, almost no heat whatsoever, incredibly spicy, wonderful. The Bacatum peppers from South America do incredibly well for us. I mean, they're perennial for me. It's incredible. I mean, I didn't even cover some of these peppers, and they came back after last winter. I mean, I've had peppers come back for 4 or 5 years in the Bacatum group. It's an amazing kind of thing. And they are incredibly productive, incredibly flavorful, incredibly sweet. So peppers, it matters which ones you grow. There it is. Parsley, I don't know. I'm still experimenting with parsley. What parsley grows best here? I don't know. I think that's a good question. What do we want out of parsley? Well, we want something that doesn't go to seed too soon. Same with kales. We don't want them to go to seed too soon in spring. Broccolis, interesting question. Still playing with them, still sort of figuring it out. Blue Wind has always done very well for me. There are some varieties that didn't do so well. It's much more fun to think about the ones that did do well and why they did well. But it can make a difference which ones you grow. Greg says he likes Black Beauty, and that's interesting. Greg, I have not always had great luck with Black Beauty, but it is a variety that has been grown in Florida for a long time, probably is pretty humidity tolerant. And it just goes to show that I can't grow everything. So I haven't killed Black Beauty enough to know whether I actually like it or not. There it is. David, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill, are you colluding with the Russians again to influence the outcome of the kale market?
There it is. There it is. You know, and I don't know why it's called Russian kale or Siberian. And I don't know why these have these names, but they do. I don't know that it's any more grown in Russian, but that's kind of the group. And
anyway, I wanted to talk about river dams today because I've been reading several stories over the last couple of months in different Alabama-based publications about the status, the state of our river dams, especially, what was it, a couple weeks ago where Alabama Power had the license for a Coosa River Dam yanked from, I think it was the federal government. And that got me thinking, if there was a failure of a dam in one of our rivers that feeds into our estuary, which I'm not 100% sure on this, but you may know this. I think our river system that feeds into our estuary is one of the most dammed up river systems that feeds into any estuary. But what if there was like a, just a one dam failed versus a cascading failure of dams? What kind of damage that would that do to our ecological system down here in the Mobile River Delta system, if any? Or would it actually improve the river delta?
What an interesting and complicated question. I can tell you. I've said this out loud in public before, but I can tell you that I've talked to people who know a lot about the dams and who've operated the dams, that there's been more than one occasion on the Coosa system and Tallapoosa system when there was concern about a cascade failure. And by cascade, what we mean and what David is talking about, I think he understands this, is that there are multiple dams on the Coosa River, for example. If a dam high up on the Coosa were to fail, the excess water that pours out of that dam would likely cause a failure in the next dam. And then you've got two big loads of water that are more likely to cause a failure in the third dam downstream. And then you've got three big loads of water that are more likely to cause a failure in the fourth dam downstream and doing a lot of damage in the meanwhile to banks and everything else. So a cascade is when it's like a domino effect, except it's more than dominoes because there is an order. There is an increasing rate of damage because of the excess water that's accumulating at each dam.
It's kind of like a snowball rolling downhill.
That's right. There you go. It's very good. Much more than like a domino, it's like a snowball rolling downhill. Thank you. I'm not smart enough to say that. You are. And there it is. And so it is a big concern. Those dams have to be carefully managed. Because flood control was actually never a reason for building dams in Alabama. They tried to make it, for example, Lake Martin. I did a lot of research on this. Lake Martin, biggest lake on the Tallapoosa, biggest lake in Alabama. They wanted to rationalize it as a flood control lake because they could get federal funding for it. And so they kept going back trying to get federal funding. They could not get federal funding for flood control because in order to make that lake do flood control in a humid climate like ours, it would have to have covered most of about three counties. I mean, literally. It would have to be huge. And then you would have to have these huge fluctuations, which would drive everybody crazy. These dams were never designed for flood control. So what happens, what that means is that if we get the convergence of a few big hurricanes, and if we haven't already drained these dams down or if we haven't done all the right preparation, and we get one of these big concentrations of rainfall in an entire basin, it would not be a pretty thing. Is it possible to conceive of that? Yeah, I think it is. And what does that mean for the Delta? In the short run, and maybe within our entire lifetimes, it probably wouldn't be a good thing for the Alabama River system. It could be a pretty big deal. I therefore hope that there isn't a cascade failure because I really worry about the total impact. There may be smaller failures that don't result in cascades. And we would hope that those, that if there is a failure, it's one of the smaller types that actually make the dams unusable without actually causing a cascade. And I think that's possible with the geology around some of these dams, that you begin to get piping that occurs in the geology around the dam, which is what that means is the water begins to find a channel through this weird geology that we have here in Alabama and makes a little underground stream that actually works its way around the dam. That's possible, too. That probably would not result in a cascade, but would make a big mess, but wouldn't result in the kind of cascade that we're talking about. Ooh, David.
You can answer this question after the break, but what does the how does not having a state agency that oversees dam safety increase the likelihood of a cascade failure?
Not at all.
Not at all? Okay.
No. The ones that ensure dam safety are mostly small dams. A different issue. A different issue, to be honest. What we have is the Corps of Engineers supervises the Corps of Engineers. And we assume that they've done all the right calculations. And the Corps of Engineers, I often sympathize with the Corps of Engineers, and of course the Corps of Engineers never makes a mistake, right?
Yeah, ask that to the people of Dolphin Island.
Yeah, so that's another story too. I've often sympathized with the Corps on that Corps too. But we'll talk about that a little more. Charlie's going to make me take a break.
Okay,
David, I did it. I answered your question, sort of, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
All right. Thanks for calling.
All right. Call when you get off the train. Call Indivisible. Call Indivisible.
And the chances are good. FM Talk 106.5, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority, and Dr. Bill Williams.
Well, skies will be partly cloudy across the Gulf Coast today. Look for scattered thunderstorms with temperatures in the upper 80s. Tonight, a few thunderstorms, lows in the lower 70s. And for Monday, mostly cloudy with scattered thunderstorms and highs in the mid-80s. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams for FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority.
Double rebates. That's right, double rebates. Up to $400 off. Now available at Mike Ward's Liberty Safes on all Liberty Colonial models and up. Unbelievable savings on clearance models with instant cash rebates, free accessories, up to $150, free ground floor delivery up to 50 miles, and 0% interest with approved credit. Now's the time to save on a Liberty Safe at Mike Ward's Liberty Safes. The best and largest selection of safes on the Gulf Coast. Own peace of mind. Own a Liberty Safe from Mike Ward's. That's exit 5B Moffitt and I-65 in Mobile. Just look for the giant Liberty Safe.
Since the dawn of time, mankind has sought enlightenment, yearned to know if the earth was round, how fire worked, and why apples fell to the ground. The cave house and quill pen are gone, replaced by three-bedroom homes and cell phones, but we're still curious. That's why a great local newspaper is so important. Lanyap Weekly is the Mobile area's newspaper, with the stories nobody has the guts or knowledge to report. Lanyap gets to the bottom of things, providing top-notch journalism every great city deserves. No simple one-inch deep stories here, plus we're locally owned too. 30,000 papers, more than 1,200 distribution locations, and an increased circulation this year to reach even more readers in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Lanyap, the paper that breaks the big stories with tough, thorough reporting, plus the area's best commentary, cuisine, arts, sports, and business coverage. Pick up your copy at grocery stores, businesses, drugstores, in our iconic hideous pink or regal purple boxes. In the mail for just $1 a week and online at lanyapmobile.com. Lanyap, something extra for Mobile and Baldwin counties.
This is Dalton Orwig with FM Talk 106.5. Join myself, Prep Sports Report's Corey LeBounty, and the man we call JD for a new show on Monday nights at 7, FM Talk 106.5's Sports Night, presented by Jersey Mike's. On Monday, we'll recap the big games in college football, including the South Alabama Jaguars looking for a huge upset on the road against Oklahoma State, and number 3-ranked Georgia traveling to play South Carolina in the SEC Game of the Week. Plus, week one of the NFL season, it's a new show on your favorite station. Monday nights at 7, Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Well, it's an interesting discussion on dams. Interesting thing. Greg says that they built ladders to allow fish to move around the dams. I wish they had. I wish there were a way for fish to move around these dams. Greg, we don't have a way for that to happen right now. It's a big problem. It's why we're losing Greg, listen to this. It's important that you understand this because you love these fish. The Alabama race of striped bass. Striped bass, the native Alabama striped bass, are about to go extinct because of the dams, because of the dams on the Alabama River. Alabama shad are about to go extinct because of the dams on the Alabama River. Alabama shad are incredibly important to a huge number of fish and to a huge number of other creatures. The sturgeon, Alabama sturgeon, is about to go extinct. The Gulf sturgeon is probably going to be extirpated from the Alabama River system, eliminated from the Alabama River system because of these dams. There are so many fish. I can't tell you how many fish. And listen, Greg, here's the funny part. Those of you who love fish, they used to have mullet fries in Birmingham because the mullet traveled all the way to Birmingham. Folks, are you hearing me? We killed this river system with these dams on the Alabama River. I am less worried right now about the Coosa River system. That was done a long time ago. The dams that are really killing us right now in terms of fish, Greg, hear this. Those of you who fish, hear this. The dams that are killing us are the Corps of Engineer dams on the Alabama River. They are the bad acting dams. They are having a huge impact in furthering extinctions in Alabama and eliminating the fish that we love. Red Horse. Greg, can you talk about Red Horse? You remember the Red Horse up there in coal country? You remember the Red Horse?
Hey, Bill. My wife told me that her and her brothers and sisters growing up 50-some-odd years ago, and I won't get exact, used to live real close to Mobile Bay. And she said as kids, they would go out and play. They had a little aluminum skiff. And she said the water was clear. It was beautiful. And now it's so silty you can't see more than about a foot usually. Was that the ten tom that caused all that?
No,
extra
I don't
silting?
Think so. I actually don't think so. I well, think
what
that
do you
was.
Think
I think that
it?
Was the destruction of the oyster reefs in Mobile Bay.
That destroyed the oyster reefs.
No, I think that we destroyed the oyster reefs. We actually dug up these ancient reefs all over Mobile Bay.
Old Shell Road and stuff
and
like
it's
that.
It's all buried under the interstate and under Old Shell Road and other places. And interstate, more than anything else, did the work. But we took all these old shells that were serving as barriers to wave action, and we took them out of Mobile Bay. We
yep.
cleaned it out. What that meant is that when a wave starts on the eastern shore, it just moves and sweeps across the bay without any impediments whatsoever. And that makes it very hard. Once you begin to eliminate all of those structures and you begin to eliminate marshes and other things, it makes it very hard for the marshes and grasses to come back. And oysters themselves do an incredible job of cleaning Mobile Bay. But we have lost, we're probably down to about 5% of our original oyster population.
What about other marine life?
Well, it's had a huge impact on the other marine life because we know that these oyster reefs are incredibly productive for fish fry. For young fish.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that the loss of those oyster reefs, it was incredibly important to get those back. We've squandered a lot of our money that was supposed to go to oyster reef restoration.
Living along, what is that, Bay Bridge? What's the road that runs along the bay? I can't.
Yeah, it was the old
I can't think of the name of it.
But the old Bay Road.
But
yeah.
She said it was just a wonderful place to grow up.
I remember. I am old enough to remember, which I'm not. I'm just approaching 60 now, I will say. But I remember as a kid that the grasses were still growing there along the western shore of Mobile Bay when I was a kid.
Not there anymore.
They're not there anymore. The grasses are gone. The grass beds are gone. I remember walking through those grass beds looking for flounder. We had spotlights. Everybody would go walking and gigging for flounder
and
through
crabbing.
Those grass beds and crabbing and everything else. All of that is gone, and it's gone, I think, in large measure because of what we did to the oyster reefs in the 60s and 70s.
This effort to restore the reefs, is that going to help?
It can, but we have to do it at a larger scale than what we're doing. We have to do more than just put them in here and there, and we have to quit spending money on a lot of the money that was going to environmental restoration. It didn't go to environmental restoration. It's going to build more roads up in North Baldwin County. It's going to build a hotel I shouldn't do this. Charlie, you made me do this.
I can see the fire in your eyes.
Well, I mean, there it is.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me about how muddy Mobile Bay is and then talk about spending money on a hotel down there in at Gulf Shores.
Yeah.
The money was to go to restore Mobile Bay. If you're not mad about it, then you don't care about Mobile Bay.
Or you just don't know. Sorry, Bill.
See what you started there, David?
It's his fault.
Hey, some really great points to follow up on. I have these caterpillars all over my young Satsumas in there. Really got a great picture of them. John sent me a great picture. One of my favorite caterpillars. John, do me a favor. When you see that caterpillar, do this. It's really so much fun. It is so much fun. Be brave. Be brave, John. Go out there and run your finger down the back of that caterpillar and watch what happens. It puts up these little antennas. Boom! Little red antennas, and then smell. Ooh, and it smells like something weird. That is the largest swallowtail butterfly. That is the caterpillar of the largest swallowtail butterfly in North America. The orange dog, the great citrus butterfly. They do a little bit of damage to your citrus, but your citrus, I can tell, is plenty big. It can sustain it. It's not going to be a problem to the citrus. The butterflies are beautiful. Those big, big butterflies you see with the black with the yellow stripes on them, kind of yellowish-orange stripes, the orange dog, really great. That's what you're looking at. Really a great thing. Johnny, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. I bought a hibiscus from a garden center a while back, last year, and it got froze during the winter last year, and I thought it was dead. And it had three little plants in it. I thought it was dead, but it came back out from a shoot. And it's been growing all summer. I repotted it early in the summer. It's been growing all summer. It's just like 1 liter trunk coming up from that little shoot. And it just grew up all summer, just one liter.
Yeah.
Without any branches. And I'm kind of wondering what I need to do to get that thing to branch out.
Well, that's probably pretty natural. How tall is that little sprout now? How tall is it?
It's about 2 feet tall.
Oh, leave it be. It's okay. You can pinch it back, but at this point, I think you just want to get as much growth out of it as you can. It is, you know, it's struggling to come back. There are a couple of things to consider. One, in general, once the temperatures cool off a little bit, you'll probably start getting some flowers. And once you start getting flowers, it's going to want to branch out and it's going to slow down in its growth. I don't think I would pinch it back at this point. I don't think there's going to be any advantages to you.
Yeah, it's still putting flowers on, but
yeah,
it seems like every time it rains, they kind of fall off.
Yeah, it's the high night temperatures. It just doesn't do as well. There's another thing to consider, and I don't know that it's the case here. Sometimes those hibiscus, particularly the tropical hibiscus, are grafted. Not always, but sometimes. And you kind of remember what that means from your citrus. It means that the rootstock is not the same as the top. And so you don't know what you're going to get exactly if it's just rootstock. It sounds to me like – so it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see. We don't know.
I've gotten flowers off of it, on it since it came up.
Yeah.
They look correct. They're not quite as intensely pink as I remember when I first bought it, but they look very similar
to the original
flowers. So I assume that I got the same.
Yeah, that's good. So what's going to happen is cool temperatures intensify those colors. Hot weather, when the plant is struggling and when the weather's hot, the colors are often less intense. I think you'll find that as the night temperatures cool off a little bit, the colors will intensify, and you'll have that color again. But Johnny, I don't think I would pinch it back. I don't think that's at that height. I don't think it's going to be a big help.
I did want to give you some. In case somebody, you were talking about cabbage.
Yeah.
I like to grow cabbage, and I want to give people advice in case they might be starting it for the first time. Go out there where you planted your tomatoes, if you still got that spot, and if you haven't done anything to it, like turned it over or anything like that, just cabbages, they like to grow in that soil that's not been turned or dug or anything like that. They want it to be compacted.
Isn't that good?
So go out there with your post hole diggers and dig your hole for your cabbages to be planted and put compost in there and plant them into that, and they'll grow up, and I guarantee you they'll hatch.
Johnny, I am listening to you. Man, that is a thing. I have it. That's an interesting thing. And I, that's you're the man growing these cabbages. So I got to, there got to be something to that, man. That's good to know. Hey Johnny, it's always great to hear from you. Great to hear from you. Folks, we got to take a break. Tara, I'm sorry we didn't get to you this break, but let's come back and talk some more.
I'm Dr. Brian Heller with Southern Cancer Center. I'm often asked how I got into the field of oncology. In medical school, I wasn't sure what kind of doctor I wanted to be until that first day on a rotation in the cancer ward. I met a young girl with leukemia who had a huge impact on me. After that, I met another cancer patient and then another. I had never before experienced interacting with patients on such a deep level. That's when I knew I wanted to take care of patients with cancer. At Southern Cancer Center, I also want to take care of you. I want to navigate you from patient to survivor.
You owe over $10,000 in back taxes. You've called every tax firm out there. They all say the same thing, making promises they never keep, and you're sick of it. What you really need is a new start on your back taxes. If you're faced with garnishments, levies, audits, or years of unfiled tax returns, we'll fight to get you the new start you deserve. Call 1-800-266-1432. Our New Start program will stop collection efforts, remove any liens the IRS has in place, and help you reduce your back taxes by as much as 80%. That's right, 80%. Don't wait until another tax season ends and another year of penalties and interest are added to your balance. If you owe at least $10,000 to the IRS and need a new start on your back taxes, call 1-800-266-1432. That's 1-800-266-1432. Let the professionals at Coast One Financial Group fight to get you the new start you deserve. Again, that's 1-800-266-1432.
Are you at risk for oral cancer?
I never chew tobacco.
I don't drink much.
Never smoked a cigarette in my life.
You're three times as likely to get oral cancer if you drink or use tobacco. What about HPV?
HPV? Isn't that about cervical cancer?
What does that have to do with oral cancer?
You're 30 times more likely to get oral cancer if you have HPV or the human papillomavirus.
HPV? Didn't know that.
Learn more about HPV and oral cancer at myoms.org. This message is brought to you by your oral and facial surgeons.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I got a lot of fun things to talk about. Dan, I am so proud of Dan. Dan, I am so proud of you for growing those calendulas. That is such a smart thing to do. It's such a great thing to do. You know, the calendulas, they kind of lean over. You'll need to thin them out a little bit. You can just take a little pair of scissors in there and clip some of them out because they're growing kind of thick. If you're going to transfer them to another pot, you can do that too. But they will lean over. They'll straighten up. One of the interesting things that happens to cool season plants, we have to start them in August. But these hot nights, they get a little lanky. It's just like they kind of stretch themselves too much during the hot nights. It's attenuated growth, I think, is the one of the technical terms for it. But they overstretch during the hot nights. If the nights are cool, they don't do that as much. But that's and so they flop over. It happens to broccoli. It happens to kale. It happens to the calendulas. It makes them a little bit messy looking this time of year, but they'll straighten up and fly right. Once the nights cool off, they'll be fine. But, Dan, you're doing a great job there. They're going to be you got a little too many of them, so you're going to have to thin that out. Greg, we can talk about snaring red horse. We're going to talk about snaring red horse one of these days on the Cahaba. And it's just what a great story, snaring red horse. And Greg, if you'll have to call me someday when we can talk about snaring red horse. We should talk more about mullet, and we should talk more about the impacts of these dams. To clarify some of the things I was talking about, the dams on the Alabama are not really hydroelectric dams. Their existence is based on something much crazier and It had to do with navigation of the Alabama River. They produce a little teeny tiny drop of hydroelectric power, enough for probably, 50,000 homes, 75,000 homes. It's not much, and really only Miller's Ferry does that. It's a little teeny tiny drop of hydroelectric power. So they're not hydroelectric dams. The dams on the Coosa River are hydroelectric dams, but not on the Alabama. They're strictly for – they're really almost entirely made for navigation. And, of course, nobody's navigating them anymore. But the dams are there. There are ways of fixing this. We can talk about that someday. Let's follow up with that question. And Greg, it's going to be a day when we can talk about Snare and Red Horse. You got to come on to the show. You're going to have to talk about this. Don't do it today because we ain't got time. But one of these days you're going to have to come on the show and you're going to talk to me about Snare and Red Horse. You got to talk to me about it on the show. There it is. Sorry. That's just the way it is. We're going to talk about mullet in Birmingham. We're going to talk about the Alabama race of striped bass and what happened to them. It's an important thing to talk about. It's a big thing to talk about. Gosh, what other questions have we got here this morning that I haven't answered? Question about fertilizing. Oh, look at this. John, you did it. John did it. John touched the caterpillar, and the little horns came up, and it's so good. Did you smell those horns, John? Don't they have a cool smell? John, you know, here's what I would do. If you've got 10 of them and they're worrying you, and it's a young tree, how young is that tree? You got there's the tree. And it's a young Satsuma. So here's what I would do. Leave two of them on there. Leave a couple of them on there. Pick the rest of them off. Just throw them in the woods somewhere. And leave a couple of them on there. It is a young tree, and they could do a little. They might slow it down a little bit. They're not really going to hurt it bad, but you know, leave two of them on there. Throw away eight of them. Is that okay? Next year, as the tree gets bigger, it ain't going to matter at all. Bigger trees, these worms, the orange dog butterflies, caterpillars, really they eat the leaves, but they're not. They usually don't pose a danger to the tree unless the tree is really small. Really small. So, John, I'm agreeing. Looking at the picture of your tree, it looks young. 10 may be too many. Remove some. Pet them as you do, because it's so good. And then smell those horns. Smell those horns. And it's a good thing. Somebody is asking me. Jim has got his persimmon tree. Persimmons did great this year. I love persimmons when they come in. It's one of my favorite things in the whole world. Taxman loves the persimmons when they come in. We love persimmons here. It's one of the things we do really, really well. And it's not the kind of thing you find at the grocery store, so people don't know what to do with it. But they're really great. Somebody said something about fertilizing satsumas. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. Norman, I'm listening. What's up?
Good morning.
How are you?
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can now. Man, I tell you, I have called in several times about Orinoco and other types of bananas, but
yes.
I've got some citrus trees that get pretty much sun all day. Like right now, they're in full sun. They'll stay in full sun pretty much till probably 5, 6 o'clock. But the question I have is, I've got one that's about 10 feet tall, and it is a Satsuma tree, and I'm looking at it now. It has never bared, and right now it's got 3 Satsumas on it, but I've got another Satsuma tree 20 feet away from it that's maybe 8 feet tall, and I bet there's 50 on it. How does that work where some will have and some won't?
And they're all equally in full sun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got... I have 7 citrus trees, navel oranges, satsumas, kumquats, same, yep.
Yep, and do I hear chickens in the background, can I ask?
Yes, sir.
I love that. I love that sound.
I got 10 of them.
That's good. So listen. Let me tell you.
Uh-huh.
My ears are sensitive to chickens because I miss my chickens so bad.
Well, I'll bring you one day.
Well, the problem is
all those heartbroken oak trees.
Yeah.
You need something to brighten your day up.
That's right. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
My suspicion is, given that if they're all the same age, my suspicion is that it probably has something to do with winter damage. We had a cold winter.
Biggest tree that I have has been in the ground longer than any of them.
Yeah.
And it's never produced. Never. This is actually the first time I've seen any fruit on them, which is only three or four satsumas.
And they're all the same variety of satsuma.
Yeah. I've got four satsumas, two navel orange, and a couple kumquats.
Huh. And the satsuma trees are 10 years old. Well,
yeah.
You know, it's to me, so when satsumas don't produce, I can say a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes it's about sun, and that all is right. That can be a big factor, but you say that's not an issue. My next step
almost in full sun right now.
My next step is to go to winter damage, and that can be very funny at times.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost hard to explain. But here's one of the interesting things: when we get a cold winter, I will have on my most cold sensitive citrus, which is a. Mm-hmm. Which is only moderately cold sensitive, but it's more cold sensitive than my satsuma, and that's a Mirasol clementine.
Okay,
that clementine will often set fruit on only one side of the tree on the lower branches, and that's because the winter winds. Mm-hmm. are severe on one side of that tree, and it will burn
that something,
and it will burn the tree on one side and only on the other side. Now that's on one tree. So if you've got multiple trees,
yeah,
and they each are a little bit different, have a little slightly different exposure to wind,
yeah,
that probably explains it.
I think all my satsuma trees have different characteristics, like my chickens. Some of them are very tame, and some of them don't want nothing to do with
it. Well, Norman, I think you're okay. Fertilize it with some cottonseed meal next spring, but I bet you if we have a mild winter, that one's going to fruit pretty good next year.
Super. Thanks so much, my friend. Have a great
day. All right, you too.
Because everything's on the phone.